Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 234 shopping days left until Christmas, and I believe you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Hello.
Hello, John, and Mr. Bradford.
I have done nothing but teleport bread for the past 6 months.
I have actually successfully made bread since
the last
time.
Rips to a real one. Yes.
How has everybody been doing since our last podcast?
Been doing all right. Yourself?
Well, like I said, I did finally make some bread. It wasn't the Bradford recipe that we did on our podcast, but now that I know I can make bread, I can move on to more nuanced things like your recipe.
There are bigger and breader things.
Yes, yes, yes. J-Man, what about you?
Feeling more manic than depressive today. Let's do this shit.
Okay. Well, this episode feels like it's been a long time coming because as soon as it came out, we all kept saying we have to do an episode on this. And it's been about a year and a half. So
I'd like to correct. I was saying, oh, we're going to have to do one about this.
Yeah, that's
more,
true.
More of an obligation than a desire.
Yes.
This is what we like to call an occupational hazard, is having to discuss things like The Grinch. But actually, it kind of came out that this is a movie that kind of demands to be discussed, because as of now, The Grinch, 2018's The Grinch, is the highest grossing Christmas film of all time. And I hate that.
Only just because money doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah,
if the past couple months were any indication.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a world now where $100 million worth of money went to Trolls 2 because everyone's trapped inside and desperate for entertainment. So, like, I get it. But also, Home Alone was the highest grossing Christmas film of all time for a good 28 years. And the only reason I think The Grinch finally beat it was because of a little thing called inflation.
Have we taken a look at the adjusted for inflation return?
That is a good question. Something we should probably go look up real quick, because I do not have it in front of me.
I want to say Box Office Mojo does that. You can
do
that.
Yeah, I can do that real quick. So if anybody would like to vamp while I'm doing that, please go right ahead.
Vamp?
We could just do another podcast talking about Animal Crossing instead.
I bought turnips this morning.
Yeah, same here. I got my Switch the day after we recorded that thing last time, so I have my own island now. I've not done a damn thing to it, though, because I'm still trying to get the stupid dog to show up so I can actually make paths. You have to make a dog show up to your island and play a song, and then you're allowed to make paths. That's how the game works.
Yes, yeah, pretty much. The uninitiated.
Okay. This seems wrong, but I'm going to roll with it.
That may as well be the tagline of our podcast. This seems wrong, but I'm going to roll with it.
Yeah. Okay. Home Alone, worldwide gross in 1990, $477 million. A fairly respectable number, even for 1990.
Okay.
The Grinch, 2018, worldwide gross, $511 million.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran the Home Alone numbers through an inflation calculator. If 1990 were 2020, Home Alone would have grossed $942 million.
So, The Grinch is not, other than inflation, The Grinch is not the highest grossing holiday film of all time.
Right, taking into account inflation, I believe
Home Alone did almost double. Okay.
Yeah.
That puts my heart at ease a little bit.
But just for funsies, let me run the Grinch through the same calculator.
Just to see what it's going to be in 2040, or just to adjust it down to 1992? No.
If 2018 were 2020, the Grinch would have made $525 million. So, okay, not that much difference.
All right.
Box Office Mojo actually has an adjusted to 2020 chart. Their estimation is that Home Alone would be the 43rd highest grossing movie of all time if you adjust it.
Well, like, period, of all time, not even counting Christmas movies, like counting everything, right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Well, see, that's still impressive.
Yeah, for reference, if you adjust it, Avatar is down to 15th on the list. The top five are Gone with the Wind, Star Wars, Sound of Music, E.T., and Titanic.
Mm. Hmm. Yeah.
Deserved. I can't say any movie deserves to be forgotten more than Avatar.
I mean, Gone with the Wind is up there, but, you know,
we are
not the podcast for getting into that. So, gentle friends, this is the third adaptation of The Grinch, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Yes.
This is the second podcast in which we've had to discuss The Grinch.
We discussed the original one along with something else. I don't remember what.
We discussed the original one and the 2000 version in the same episode. Okay.
So, I'm going to go ahead and put this on the table.
Okay.
If you are listening to this and you have not seen the 1966 special, at least go watch that. But we will most likely also be referencing Jim Carrey's 2000 The Grinch as well frequently in this podcast.
I believe we will heretofore refer to that one as Grinch 2000.
Grinch 2000, as we did. If you have not seen that, I do not want you to have to go see that, but you might want to listen to our episode about it. It is a trip.
It's the episode where we famously resorted to doing exercise because we were so bored by the movie.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So you need a frame of reference. This is a mirror reflection of a mirror reflection at this point, at least in the way that we're talking about it. Because you can't talk about Grinch 2018 without talking about Grinch 2000, I feel.
Yeah, and I think if Grinch 2000 was already a Funhouse Mirror version of the Grinch story, this one is like taking that Funhouse Mirror and trying to bend it back without breaking it.
That's a very apt analogy, I think.
And I don't know that they did a great job, because in doing so, they bent certain other things out of shape, and I do not like it. So we can get into some of that.
Well, I'll say overall, they made this movie a lot less mean-spirited than anything else ever to do with The Grinch. And I'll at least give them props for that, because, man, following The Grinch too close just kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's kind of where I felt like it fell apart a little bit, because I felt like The Grinch is too nice of a character in this.
They made him too likable for most of the movie. And
yes.
It's a story about redemption, but I don't know. I don't know, man. Like,
I mean, we'll
get into this. I agree that this is maybe one part that is not a bright spot in the liberties they took, I guess you could say.
Sure.
But thank goodness they removed that weird puberty subplot from Grinch 2000, because
you mean the horrifying flashback where it's kind of hinted that the Grinch was conceived at a key party? Yes.
Well, there's that, but also like the Cindy Lou Who song where she's I don't know, man.
Oh, the Where Are You Christmas BS.
Yeah. Which apparently gets some play on the radio now, which is the worst thing.
It's always gotten play on the radio. I mean, and I still to this day cannot stand that song. So that's one tick in
to me.
That's one tick in this version's favor, is that it's far less maudlin and like.
Well, yes, it's also less horny.
Less horny, but also like less maudlin and saccharine, I guess.
It's very I think part of the Grinch 2000's issue is that it's like very late 90s, early aughts.
It tries to,
by its nature.
It tries to do too much.
In this one, how the Grinch is just—he's just a grumpy guy who lives on the edge of town, basically.
Yes,
true. Yeah,
it is very fun to see all of this nonsense basically be in the Grinch's head.
Right, because he's the only one who like thinks there's a problem, and the problem is him.
Yeah, it's not like in Grinch 2000 where everyone's like, holy shit, the Grinch is coming, run. Everyone's just like, oh, hi, Grinch, how you feeling today?
Well, not only that they feared him, but, you know, in Grinch 2000, he has the backstory where basically the entire town of Whoville tortured him, and he has a reason to be bitter and upset other than, you know, the systemic failures of the orphanage system, which I guess we'll get into in a moment.
I mean, in this one, the only people the Grinch wants to murder are pentatonics, and I mean, that's just normal.
Yeah, that's perfectly reasonable, and I agree.
Was that pentatonics, really? Ugh.
Yes.
Of course it was, because this movie is basically, what, Love Act? They found every A-list musician and actor that they could find at the time, rounded them all up into a room, because of course they did, because who...
Fired them all out of a cannon, and all of them landed in a film canister titled The Grinch.
Pretty much.
Let's start from the start.
Yeah.
Well, first things first. This adaptation, this is an animated feature film from the people at Illumination Studios, who famously made all of the Despicable Me / Minions movies. And I feel like we can't talk about this movie without mentioning that those people apparently cannot make a movie without making that movie Despicable Me. Because this is basically a Despicable Me film.
Yes, it is. How many of the DM franchise have you seen, Joe?
Oh, the Gruniverse?
The Gruniverse.
I've
there
seen
are three
everything.
Now, right?
I have somehow missed the second one, but I've seen all the rest of them.
The second one is where Leigh and I dipped, actually. Leigh and I are very forgiving when it comes to movies. We shut it off about halfway through. I can count on one hand the number of movies that we've dipped. Both of us have agreed to dip on halfway through at home. And Despicable Me 2 is among those.
I do recall my parents telling me a story how they went to go see Despicable Me 2 at the theater. And at some point, the fire alarm went off and they had to evacuate everybody out of the film like 30 minutes in. And
probably only a quarter of the people came back.
No, they were so disinterested in the movie, they just did not go back.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
My frame of reference for DM / Minions is small comparatively, but I can see the what would you call it? Manic energy / gizmo fetish that those movies have that kind of carries over into this.
I mean, it's the same basic... Yeah,
the original Grinch book had the gizmo nonsense. Seuss bullshit.
It did. So it was actually a good match.
Well, but then maybe that's just a little bit of like fortuitous production
happenstance,
I guess, because like all of the Despicable Me's and then this one they're all about some mean-spirited, you know, genius trying to hatch a scheme to steal something and get back at somebody. I know that's very vague, but like, I see the gears turning in their heads. Like, oh, we can make this like Despicable Me.
I wonder if they are slated to do a Mario movie, if they're actually going to follow Bowser mostly, as he steals kidnaps Princess Peach.
Did they
do the Angry Birds movie too, or was that somebody else?
I want to say that was somebody else.
Okay, that was probably Sony, right?
Yeah,
Sony Pictures Animation or whatever. Or no, Blue Sky, I think, did the Angry Birds.
That was Fox, yeah.
See, all of these kind of like B-list computer animated companies kind of get jumbled all together in my mind because they're all the same thing.
Yeah, if it ain't Pixar, it ain't shit, basically.
All right, Illumination is who they are. They've done Despicable Me, Hop, Lorax, Secret Life of Pets, Sing, and all of the sequels thereof.
There you go.
That's right. They did do the Lorax. I forgot about that one. Okay.
So they're already well acquainted with the Seussiverse.
Final production thought, though. Did either of you guys notice who directed this movie?
Yeah, the guy from Clerks who likes it when you baby bird has come back to him.
Yes, that guy.
I only understood maybe one word of the sentence that you just said.
The co-director of this movie is Scott Mosier, who is Kevin Smith's like longtime producing partner. He's in every Kevin Smith movie as some background character, but he's also a film producer. And this is like one of his, honestly, this movie made more money than any Kevin Smith movie combined. So there's that.
I don't know whether to feel good about that or bad about that.
Honestly, Scott, good for you.
Yeah, he was one of the co-directors. The other one being Yarrow Chaney, who is a guy who's worked on every other Illumination thing, but just got promoted for this pretty much.
Yeah. So anyway, Brad, take us through the life of the Grinch.
Oh, gosh. Well, you should be familiar with this story, but I am going to try to sum it up as quickly as possible. There is a town out in the middle of nowhere. It is very Seussian, and it is called Whoville, and they are very big into Christmas. Every year they come around, every year Christmas comes around, all of the Whos are very much in the holiday spirit, and they celebrate Christmas, but the Grinch, who lives just at the edge of Whoville up on Mount Crumpet, does not. And this year he's had enough. He decides that he's going to steal Christmas, and he's going to ruin everybody's Christmas spirit by stealing all of the trees and decorations and presents and trappings of Christmas thereof. Depending on the version that you watch, he has a chip on his shoulder for different reasons. I believe in the original Seuss story, he's just a curmudgeon. In Grinch 2000, he has been terrorized his entire life by the denizens of Whoville. And in this version we are talking about today, Grinch 2018, he was an orphan who did not receive the care and attention an orphan deserves, especially around Christmas, and has a chip on his shoulder about that. He is successful in stealing Christmas. However, his encounter with a young Who named Cindy Lou Who leads him to have
more than six.
Yes.
At least.
Leads him to have a change of heart, wherein he takes, as well as observing the Whos still celebrating Christmas and singing regardless of the status of their possessions, returns all of their gifts. His heart grows three sizes, and he learns the true meaning of Christmas and begins to be more receptive to the Whos and celebrate Christmas with them. That is the broad strokes of the story. Now, depending on which version you watch, both of the padding out and details of that story will vary.
And for obvious reasons, the padding out in this version is a lot less abrasive than the Grinch 2000.
So let me break it down for you. Chuck okay. Jones, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, in 1966, while being a TV special, was a blissful, brisk, perfect 25 minutes. I think we all know how we feel about that versus all of the other versions.
It is a genuine, one of the great half hours of television of the 20th century.
It is a delight. Not only the fact that it is directed by Chuck Jones, an absolute legend of animation. Then we have 2000's The Grinch, which is 105 minutes long.
Directed by Opie Taylor himself, Ron Howard.
Ron Howard. Over an hour and a half, and live action, and in a freakish, like, melted plastic cartoon set. It's the worst. Please go watch. Actually, I take it back. Go watch it. Because it needs to be seen to be believed. It is so bad. It's probably, I want to say, it's one of the worst, like, mainstream movies we've watched for this podcast. Would you agree?
Grinch 2000? Yeah.
It's... Yeah, Grinch 2000.
Oh, easily,
Like, if we're not counting, like, the B-list stuff or, like, the F-list stuff, like Santa and Ice Cream Bunny or, like, you know, the bad horror movies. This is the worst wide-release film that we watched for this show.
Yeah, definitely the most mean-spirited, I would say that very easily.
Yeah, it's mean-spirited.
Most, like, cynical and hollow and just, like, we're in this for a buck.
Because it's the late, it's the early aughts at this point. The Grinch 2018, thankfully, is 86 minutes, which is
still a little too long. But
it's a little long, but it's for like a feature animated.
It's long enough to be an animated movie. It's made by people who know how you're supposed to make an animated movie. I'll say that about it.
Yes. It is long enough that people will feel they got their money's worth, but it does not stretch it out overly long. I would say that. For people that went to the theaters, you say there's some sort of... let's not talk about us. Let's talk about the general movie-going public. wouldn't you say that there's a sweet spot that's somewhere between an hour and change in 2 hours that you have to hit when you have a wide release film to where people will feel that it's they've gotten their money's worth when going to a theater?
Yeah, my rule is always 90 minutes for a comedy, 2 hours for a drama. You should be doing no more or less than that. If you are, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Personally, it's if your film is dipping into triple digits, you have to have a good reason.
Agreed.
So 95 strongly minutes is agreed. The sweet spot to me.
I don't even care what genre it is. If you can get me in and out in an hour and a half, please do.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you're doing like something serious, I'll give you up to 2 hours. You have my attention for that long. If you're doing a comedy and you're going over 90 minutes, you are wasting my fucking time.
Yeah, like Lord of the Rings justifies itself, okay?
All right. Where were we? I was going through the plot summary. There are a couple of...
Well, I want to talk about, I guess, this movie's version of what's going on with Cindy Lou Who.
Okay.
So there's a subplot in this film. In Grinch 2000, Cindy Lou Who was like a little detective trying to figure out who the Grinch is and why he is angry about Christmas and what the fuck everyone's problem is. In this version, she's just a little girl who wants to send a letter to Santa Claus because she has a special wish for Christmas.
It's an improvement.
It's keep it simple, stupids. Like, it's just make it simple, make it easy, don't overcomplicate it.
One of the things I wrote down was that in this one, they allowed Cindy Lou just to be like a regular cool kid, which in the 2001, that's still in the era of just like, no, she's a girl. She has to do girl stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's the worst part about the Cindy Lou subplot in 2000. I feel like we're going to talk about Grinch 2000 more than about 2018.
This is a referendum on a film we watched 5 years ago. Okay.
The worst. No. I'll wrap back. I'll make it wrap back around to 2018. But the worst crime that they did with the Cindy Lou subplot in 2000 was like this weird, like crisis of faith subplot that they had for. Oh, it was so bad. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Where she was like, I'm not feeling the Christmas spirit anymore because I'm a teen. It was really bad. And I feel like 2018 sidesteps that enough. Now, back in 1966, she is a character that appears due to happenstance. She doesn't really have much to do in the film
She's literally 2 years old.
She gets up for a glass of water.
She's a literal baby.
Literal baby that gets up for a glass of water. And I feel like...
She is the avatar of innocence in that short.
Short of ripping her completely out of this movie, which I would have been fine with, except for when she appears as in the classic short, they did what they could, and they made basically her part of the movie was Minions, I guess. I don't know.
What I was trying to get at was, I think even maybe 5 years ago, still the idea of like, oh, there's boy stuff and girl stuff was just so ingrained in people's head that like you couldn't have this like girl character doing any of this like
adventuring shit. Or whatever. Yeah,
like fucking Rupert would be the main character if this movie was made in 2013.
Oh, absolutely.
True. I want to say I liked the kid subplot the least out of everything in this movie.
The kids seemed very much, well, it's a kid's movie. Kids literally don't know how to relate to anybody that's not a kid. Time to shove kids in here.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and it's like we get 10 minutes or so of kids doing kid stuff. And honestly, it's okay. Like, it's inoffensive to me. I don't mind it. I don't really care either. But like,
the thing that stuck out to me about the kid stuff was there's 5 kids total. And when we cut the montages of shit, one of the kids is never in them.
Is it the kid with the glasses?
No, the tallest kid with the
trucker hat or whatever.
Yes.
Oh wow.
Because he's almost a cool teen. He's hanging out. He's skateboarding and smoking hoo weed with the older hoos behind the dumpsters.
Excuse me, Brad. I believe it's called hoo hash.
Thank you. No, isn't hoo hash an actual thing in the universe? Like it's like corned beef hash or whatever.
Yeah, but really, what do you think they're actually eating that stuff?
That's the joke.
Got it.
Thanks a lot.
So can I talk about some production shit real quick? Because there's some bonkers ass shit hiding here. IMDb informed me that Pharrell Williams was not the original choice for the narrator. It was Brad Dourif.
What?
Brad Dourif.
Joe, why is Brad Dourif a psychotic choice for a narrator for a children's movie?
Because who's Brad Dourif?
Brad Dourif, Brad, is the voice of Chucky in the Child's Play movies.
Okay.
And he's also Worm Tongue in the Lord of the Rings movies. He's basically like that psychotic guy in every weird sci-fi movie you've ever seen.
Okay. Very odd choice.
It is a bug nuts insane choice. But you know what? It would have perfectly fit the theme of like the narrator for the Grinch movies, because in the original the narrator is Boris Karloff. In Grinch 2000 it's Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
So and then in Grinch 2018 it's Pharrell Williams. Like, oh, it's the NERD guy. That's horrifying and spooky.
So this movie's credit is being written by Michael Lesser and Tommy Swerdlow. Michael Lesser, his only other credit he is the sole credited writer to You, Me, and Dupree.
Huh.
And Tommy Swerdlow's writing credits he's like one of five writers on all of Snow Dogs, Bushwhacked, The Little Giants, and Cool Runnings.
Great.
I like so three that, of the, those the films.
I mean, Cool Runnings is a good film. Solid film.
I do enjoy Bushwhacked, but that's just me. Oh, boy. But so
let's get into some voice. Speaking of A-list people that they hired for no reason other than name recognition, the Grinch is voiced by no other than Benedict Cumbersnatch. Because yeah. For no reason, because it doesn't, like, I don't know if I'm familiar enough with Benny's actual speaking voice, but, like, he just kind of does a curmudgeon-y voice like this, and it's like, anybody could do it. I don't know. Doesn't feel like Cumberbatch to me.
Well, I mean, he does have like he is extremely British.
Yeah.
So this is him definitely putting on an accent for this role.
Well, there was also like the awful Doctor Strange, like American accent he tried to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I get it, but I mean, it's purely a choice for name recognition. Why? Of course it is.
Well, there was another thing on the IMDb trivia page, which is what 90% of this podcast is now, that was talking about I think they hired him to Cumberbatch it up a bunch, and then he was like, all the rest of the characters are American, why am I doing a British voice?
Because British people are evil. Don't you watch the movies?
Because British,
if there's a villain, if there's a villain, they're always British.
But that would have been perfect for this, because like it making the Grinch British would then make this movie like a British person angry about what Americans have done to Christmas. And that would have been a really interesting angle to go with for this movie. But Cumberbatch fucked it up.
It would have been better if he had stuck to his, you know, if he had bunched it up, batched it up, whatever.
I mean, they
it's
honestly...
honestly what I was...
Yeah.
It was what I was expecting, and I did not get what I expected.
I mean, they honestly, obviously only wanted him for the name on the poster. But then...
Yeah.
Then he gave them this performance, which... It's okay. It's not bad. It's just not what I would have expected it coming from him.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's similar. You could have gotten the same quality performance out of
like, well, yeah,
any
with,
number of people.
With that voice, it could have literally been anybody.
Speaking of a name recognition choice, because why the heck not? We have Rashida Jones as Donna, Cindy Lou Who's overworked, tired mother. Because why not?
Why not? I mean, it's fine. I don't have a problem with it.
Again, she's alive. That's good for her.
All of these choices can be perfectly encapsulated by totally serviceable, it's fine, completely done for name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Kenan Thompson was probably the highlight of the movie for me.
Oh, yeah.
Bricklebaum?
Yes.
Wicklebaum?
Bricklebaum is the happiest man in Whoville. That's actually a delightful role. I like this character a lot.
It is one of the new additions to the film. He is. And there's sort of this relationship between him and Cumberbatch's The Grinch, where he is... I think at the beginning they play it up like he's oblivious to the Grinch being a curmudgeon and not liking him. But I think at the end of the film, in the party scene... they play their hand a little bit more that he kind of knew what was going on and he's just a jolly guy and he like puts up with the Grinch because he's a nice guy and he wants to be his friend because he realized from the drop before anybody else that the Grinch
needed
a friend.
Season one Flanders.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's like, everybody needs a friend and I'm just going to play dumb and maybe this guy will come around. I think that's kind of maybe I'm giving the writers too much credit, but that's kind of what I got from the end of it. I don't know.
But then from the Grinch's side of things, like, the Grinch is irritated by him because he thinks that Bricklebaum thinks that the Grinch is his best friend.
Yeah, and I think that the what the writers were going for is that the Grinch actually believes that, even though, the you know, maybe Bricklebaum's being a little bit, he's being nice, but he's being tongue-in-cheek about it.
Right, like, he's just being himself, and
yeah,
he's cool with that. But the Grinch is the one who has, like, the stick up his ass and just can't kind of get out of his own head to realize that Bricklebaum's just being Bricklebaum.
Yeah, yeah. It was I think this is a decent addition to the overall plot. It adds something.
Well, and two, you need that one character who is just, like, all in on the Christmas thing for the Grinch to kind of balance it out, you know?
Yeah, yeah, he's the foil, if you will.
There's that one really great scene where the Grinch is trying to, like, sabotage Bricklebaum's Christmas party.
Or he's trying to steal the sled sled, right?
Yeah, he's trying to steal the sled. But and he accidentally, like, winds up dressed up like Santa Claus and fleeing the scene. But Bricklebaum thinks his dog is doing all this cool stuff, like bringing him treats and bringing him cake and
ringing the doorbell
and stuff. He's like, oh, damn, I got to get me some more of that cake. I think I just saw Santa Claus.
It's pretty good.
It's a good goof.
There are a couple other additions. We already talked about the kids. We talked about Bricklebaum. The other addition is the actual literal reindeer, Fred, is it?
Yeah, Fred.
This is where I feel the movie, I think the physical comedy that comes along with Fred is fine, but there's the misstep that we discussed earlier where it reveals that the Grinch, deep down, was a good guy to begin with, even when his heart was three sizes too small, because this is kind of what they did with Fred. This is the purpose that they were serving with him.
Mm-hmm. Because the Grinch basically steals Fred as a reindeer to pull his sleigh on his big heist.
And Fred's just like, okay, cool. Something to do.
Yeah. And everything's going well, but then halfway through their trial run, they run into Fred's child and mate, I guess you could say. And the Grinch is like, okay, well, that's the game. So you go on. You know, you just go be with them.
Yeah,
which, by all accounts, is not telegraphed at all, which is kind of a strange moment because Fred's having the time of his life, and he doesn't seem to be homesick or care at all that he's separated from his family. But whatever,
it's also a weird choice because it makes the Grinch is laser focused on hating the Whos.
I guess that's a good point.
Yeah, yeah.
If he's laser focused on, you know, he doesn't show that level of animosity towards everything else like he does in 2000. Like in 2000, he's just an awful, spiteful person that hates everything.
Everything, including himself,
except for Max. I guess the one constant is he likes Max in most of these films.
He does at least appreciate his dog. Yeah, that's true.
I think he's meaner to Max in the original than he is in this one.
Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
But, like, I feel like that's a decent choice because what kind of monster is mean to their own dog? Like, that's somebody taking part in animal abuse. So,
that's fair. You can't play that joke too often in a film like this without it overreaching, I guess.
Yeah. What does he do? I think the worst that he does in this movie is he makes him make him breakfast and yells at him occasionally.
Yeah. So, Brad, how does the Grinch like his coffee? Did you notice this?
It's kind of a weird, like, vacuum pot operation, but then he takes it with cream.
Mm-hmm.
In a frowny face, because of course he does.
Because of course he does. I thought you might have appreciated that little touch.
I actually really liked the gag where Fred is destroying stuff in the kitchen and then ends up making a perfect cup of coffee. I thought that was kind of a good little goof.
See, Brad, anybody can make a good cup of coffee.
Anybody can make a good cup of coffee if they know the process.
That's true.
It's more of a science than an art. Let's see.
Oh no, here we go.
What? No. I was actually looking through my list of my patented list. It's been too long since we've done a Christmas movie, especially one that has goofs. My patented list of things that I actually chuckled at. Well, okay.
let's talk about a couple of the other voices in here real quick.
Yeah, let's do that.
The audio equivalent of Blink and You Miss It, who was the mayor?
Angela Lansbury.
Why?
Because at this point, you need to get her while you still can.
That's another thing I was reading in like production shit. It was talking about how they announced Angela Lansbury in September of 2018. This movie came out in December of 2018. So that tells me that they had this like scene where we know we're going to get some good voice for this. We just need to find out who's going to who will settle for the pile of money we're going to give them.
I mean, yeah. And they went as big as they could possibly get, because Angela Lansbury is like kind of, yeah, she is animation royalty, I would say, at this point. Like,
who can we get to pick up the phone for 20 minutes and record these three lines?
Somebody
Skype
famous
in these three lines.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so we can't. Do you have any more voices you want to talk about? Because if we're talking about dropping a giant bag of money for name recognition alone, we have to talk about this soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
The only other voice notes are just for me. Two of the additional voices are the main villains in Icewind Dale. That's just for me. Tara Strong and what's his name? John Kasser. They play Yuxonomai and Belifet in Icewind Dale. That's
nerd.
I did also notice Carlos Ellis Rocky in the cast list, who is the voice of Rocco in Rocko's Modern Life.
Oh, look at that.
So they there's a couple of random ones. There, Lorraine Newman from SNL. She was the woman trying to get the jar of chutney.
Oh yeah, okay.
What a deep, like, why would you get somebody famous for that deep of a cut?
Who knows?
Yeah, it's like she has to be someone's aunt or something. That's the only explanation.
I do like that in the cast list, Pentatonix is credited as one group and not five people.
Oh, they're like listed as like carolers, Pentatonix.
Yes.
the singular entity, the hive mind known as Pentatonix.
The singular singing polycule known as Pentatonix.
I mean, if you listed a single one of those people's names, would anybody be able to recognize them otherwise? I think not.
Nobody in our listening audience, no.
Quick, name a single member of Pentatonix.
Benedict Cumberbatch. I don't fucking know.
See?
Ringo Starr.
Peace and love. All right.
The only other thing to note to pull from IMDb is apparently this was originally going to come out in December 2017, but they shelved it for a year in order to not compete with what?
2017.
Don't tell me. Was it? Give me a hint. Was it animated?
It was something we watched. That's the hint I'll give you.
It wasn't The Star, was it?
Yeah, it was.
What?
Wow.
Why did they think that there would be any contest?
Because if you're going to go with the kind of people that will go see an animated Christmas movie in the theaters, you're going to lose to the one that's more Jesus-y.
Really, you think?
I think so, yeah.
I guess in a lot of places in the country, I guess that would be true. I guess that's a good point.
I don't know, but the Grinch has enough name recognition that you'd think he could stand toe-to-toe with.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
There's not a really weird, grossly horny 2000 version of the Nativity story that they have to try to make people forget about.
I feel like you're wrong about that. Let me go look this up real quick.
The Passion of the Christ does not count.
No.
Oh, boy. So, yes. What?
Then from 2006, The Nativity Story, starring Oscar Isaac and Keisha Castle Hughes, starring Poe Dameron himself.
Wow.
I cannot speak to the horniness of this film, so let's move on.
That will be a comment for a later time. Let's see. While you were looking that up, I was going to ask. So it was from 66 to 2000. That was 34 years between the original and the first remake. So now we're at 18 years. So it's quickly decreasing. What? Assume that we still are hanging on by a thread as a society. What is the next year that we are going to get a Grinch remake at this point?
2028.
You think 2028?
I think the time is compressing.
Well, of course.
At an exponential rate.
Time has no meaning at this point, and it is certainly compressing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the cycle is getting shorter. Was 6 years ago, so it doesn't even matter anymore. But no, I feel like
we're going to Animaniacs?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I want to say 3032 is my guess.
3032? An entire millennium?
Sorry. 2032.
Jesus,
I misspoke.
Brad. Okay.
2032. Yes. It's what it's going to feel like 3032 in 2032.
Brother, you are more right than you know.
Okay. No. Okay. 2032 is my guess. John, you have a... You want to go in on this Grinch pool with us?
This Grinch.
I'm just distracted by the guy that voices Wacko Warno looks like just a generic biker.
Huh.
Rob Paulson?
No, Jess Harnell.
Oh, okay.
Wacko, not Yakko.
Oh, yeah.
This is getting very inside baseball for voice actors, and while I appreciate your enthusiasm, let's move on and talk about...
I don't want to talk about the Grinch.
No, okay, we're going to talk about the music.
Okay, we're going to talk about the music.
We're going to talk about music, and we're going to talk about how they found literally every Christmas song that anybody ever remembers and paid for the rights to play 10 seconds of it, and only 10 seconds of it. Except for when they hired Tyler, the Creator, to create a cover of You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, and they shot their shot 4 minutes into the movie. Because goodness gracious, I was not, you know, I wasn't following Christmas movies that were coming out in theaters other than the fact that I knew this existed. But even I could not escape the sort of press that it got that Tyler, the Creator, was, you know, doing a cover of You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. I think it was in most of the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
It got enough play. But man, they didn't wait. They didn't hold on to that for very long into the film, did they?
No, they just launched it as at their first opportunity.
You would think that they'd save it for the montage, but nope. They sure didn't.
They sure did not.
Did you catch the one piece of profanity in this movie?
Oh. Was it in a song?
Yes, it was in a song.
Was it in the aforementioned Tyler, the Creator song?
It was not.
Huh.
There's a scene. I think it was when Grinch was getting dressed, maybe? Something like that.
Okay.
But it's, there's a, I don't remember exactly what it is, but there's the part where they play Boogie by Brockhampton. It's the one, what are the rules for breakfast today? What are the words I'm forgetting to say? I need to let my hair down and grow up like a real ass bitch is what the line is. They cut it after ass, but before bitch. That's a very strange choice.
Very interesting.
That's like a TV edit kind of choice.
Do you guys remember airline edits? Those still exist, apparently.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, I watched Be Cool on an airplane.
I was going to watch Mad Max Fury Road until I learned that it was severely airplane edited, and then I did not, and I still have yet to see Mad Max Fury Road.
Was it edited for violence, I guess?
Yeah.
There's like 10 lines of dialogue in that entire movie.
I think it was edited for violence. I want to say there was another movie that I was going to watch in airplane. Oh, it was the other one that I did get around to watching that I was originally going to watch that had an airplane edit was The Disaster Artist.
Okay.
Had a very big airplane edit from what I understand.
I want to get into why Be Cool is such an insane choice to make an airplane edit for. There's the very first scene in Be Cool. It's John Travolta in the movie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's talking to someone else, and he talks about how when you're making a PG-13 movie, you're allowed to throw down one F-bomb, and that's it. And that's all you're allowed to do. And he says, you know what? Fuck that. And they edited that in the airplane version. The entire scene is still in there, except he says, forget that instead.
What is... Wow. Okay. Yeah.
I guess there's the famous airplane edit of Shaun of the Dead, where every instance of fuck is replaced with the word funk.
Really?
Yeah, like that. There's a feature on one of the DVDs where it's like there's this one scene, and it's just like funk this, fuck, funk that, funk you, and it's just bizarre because they apparently re-recorded the entire scene.
I really want to see the airplane edit of Shaun of the Dead because of some of the other stuff. Like, what do they do when Ed throws out a racial epithet? Like, what do they just cut that scene?
They might just have cut that scene, yeah.
What do they do? But it's he's rescuing people. Like, how do you toss it out? Maybe just mute him? I don't know. Just bleep him?
Beats me. I have a feeling they like shot multiple versions of certain scenes because they knew they were doing that.
I guess that's a good point. That's more of an 80s thing, but I guess they'll still do that sometimes. Because, like in National Lampoon's Vacation, almost all the TV edit scenes were just alternate takes. It wasn't just poorly dubbed. They actually took alternate takes for it.
Yep. Hey, guys, can you name a very famous Christmas song for me? Just anyone. Just one you hear on the radio. Throw it out for me, please.
Oh, how about the Jacksons' version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town?
Oh, yep, that's in this movie.
Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas is You.
I believe that isn't... Is that in this movie?
No, it's not. I just ruined the bit.
Thank you.
What about A Holly Jolly Christmas?
Absolutely.
Okay.
How about Christmas in Hollis?
Yeah, I would like to hear 4 seconds of Christmas in Hollis, please.
That is maybe the biggest crime of this film. We have the kids who are plotting to trap Santa, and they are rolling out in their various trikes and bikes and things like that, and we get the intro to Christmas in Hollis, and it cuts out before any of the lyrics start.
It's a good joke. It's a waste of the song, but it's a good joke, because the reason it cuts out is because they all get called home for dinner, and it's just like, oh, well, fuck this, let's go have dinner.
Yeah, I mean...
But, like, I don't know. I still expected that song to play for more than 4 seconds.
Yeah, it's a joke to use with a different song. Like, don't waste Christmas in Hollis on that joke.
Yeah, really?
Yes. So basically any Christmas song that you can think of that is remotely popular, except for the aforementioned All I Want for Christmas is You, is in this film for about 10 seconds at a time, because that's what they did.
Oh, yeah. The song that replaces You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, in the montage where he's making the Santa suit, is Buster Poindexter's Is That You, Santa Claus? Which, that's a fine replacement. Like, I like the song, but still, how are you going to replace a Grinch song in a Grinch movie with anything?
Honestly, I would have felt better if they had not gone for this top 40 radio business and had just had popular artists do covers of songs in the original soundtrack, because songs in the original soundtrack are very good.
Yeah. But I mean, you've got... In your production, you've got Tyler, the Creator. You've got Pentatonix. You've got Danny Elfman doing the score. Any combination of those three artists could do all of that.
But it would have been really good.
Yeah,
because like what those folks do in this movie is good. I liked it, but they just choose to pepper in all of this other stuff because we have this giant bag of money. And we're gonna use this giant bag of money, I guess. I don't know, man.
And also, there's other songs that aren't even Christmas songs that are just crammed in this movie for no reason.
Mambo Number 5 is one of them.
Specifically, Mambo Number 5.
Because what a strange scene.
It's a good joke, though. I enjoy that joke.
Okay, all right.
Because the Grinch is asking Max, like, oh, well, what do you want to do today? And Max just like starts to think, and like Max is driving down the highway in a convertible. The Grinch is like flapping his tongue in the breeze, and Mambo Number 5's coming out of the radio. It doesn't make any sense, but you know what? I'm here for it. I don't care.
I'm gonna go ahead and say the one other bit that I enjoyed a lot was during the stealing montage, where it has like his two missteps, and one of them is the Who's That Sleepwalking.
Oh yeah,
I thought that was. That's probably the best bit in the movie.
It's not bad. That's not bad.
It's pretty good. Anyhow.
So
yeah, there's a lot of music in this movie, and the use of it is slapdash, haphazard at best, cynical at worst. I don't know.
And it's also especially odd to me that like I think I said it before, you have Pharrell Williams narrating the film. He doesn't sing on the soundtrack at all, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah,
and nothing is for Williams, but his voice doesn't really stand out to me that much that he's a real git as a narrator, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, again, it's just the name recognition, because at that point, what was his big song in 2018 or 2017?
Happy, from one of the from Despicable Me 2, I want to say?
Yeah. Like, Happy was, like, doing Iron Man numbers at that point.
Yeah, he's like, so, he's like the song guy for the Despicable Me franchise.
You get to put him on the poster, and that's why he is there, is because he gets put on the poster.
I think in general, that's kind of a sign of like the way the whole film went, was they took the role of the narrator and they sanded him down and made him a little too nice. Like, wish they had kept Brad Dourif and made the narrator kind of a sinister narrator who has that kind of evocative voice that makes the Grinch more nasty than he actually is.
And not only that, doesn't the narrator in both of the other versions sing your, basically break narration to sing You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch?
No.
Because isn't it Boris Karloff that sings your, in the original, though?
No, in the original, it's what's his name?
I don't know the names.
He's the voice of Tony the Tiger.
Oh, okay.
Thurl Ravenscroft.
Thurl Ravenscroft. That's it. He sings the songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well. Anyhow.
Point being, Anthony Hopkins did not sing in Grinch 2000.
Okay. Well. Point being. Again, yet another name, and all of this just feels very cynical because it's a name. Again, perfectly serviceable, perfectly fine, but could have been a little more frugal on getting a narrator of that quality, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, so let me address this point real quick. So with Cindy Lou Who's whole story arc, she wants to talk to Santa Claus because she has a special wish that she wants for Christmas, and the wish is that she wants someone to, quote-unquote, help her mom, because she's a single mom, and she's overloaded with three kids and is just a wreck. She's basically wishing for a new dad for Christmas, right?
Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
I was not going to belabor this point, and I don't know if it's the case with Cindy Lou Who, but it's definitely with the Grinch. We got a dead parent alert.
Oh, God, you're right!
Either that or, like, an absent parent alert.
I didn't even think of that. Like,
She's in an orphanage.
I'm literally talking about it right now, and it's just, damn it. I'm a failure of a host because I didn't even recognize the words that were coming out of my mouth.
Sound the klaxon. I mean, it's double so. It could be the case with Cindy Lou, but it's definitely the case with the Grinch. I mean, it could not be, but that's maybe even more tragic if he's just dumped and not wanted. But
true.
Where I was going with this.
So Cindy Lou Who gets her wish at the end because the Grinch is invited to their Christmas party and he helps her mom with the cakes and the food and all that. You know,
and in the credits, it's actually kind of advance the plot a little bit in the credits too.
So here's my question, and I think you know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going with this.
Is the Grinch her new dad?
Yes, he absolutely is. I didn't know if they were going to go in that direction. They don't explicitly do, but no, I don't think so. I don't think they play it that. But I'm sure some people read into it that way. I'm sure there's fan art out there.
I think the Grinch is Volsil, and that's what gives him his STEM degree powers to fix everything.
his what?
The Grinch has a STEM degree. That's why he fixes all the shit and makes all the gadgets.
Yeah.
But if he fucks, he would lose his magic power, so he can't fuck.
He's a wizard. The other question I had, and I guess this is germane to the point that you were making, is the Grinch the same species as the Whos?
I don't know. I assume not.
It's never clear, and they kind of,
I mean, the Whos are moderately hairy anyway themselves.
They kind of broach this in 2000, since he's the result of like a key party hookup, but he's like a weird, like, turned, you know how in like D&D you have elves and then you have drow. He's like a drow Who, you know?
Oh yeah, he's like a high Who.
He's like a blood Who.
Oh, man.
A dark who,
if you will. Yeah. But that
Speaking
also...
Of,
yeah,
one of the few notes I took for this movie was the Night Elves are going to be pissed that they stole a world tree for their Christmas tree.
But that also raises a question I had, which was early in the film, we see the Grinch putting on Grinch fur pants, which makes me wonder.
And shoes.
Did he kill another Grinch and skin it and is walking around wearing its skin?
Maybe he's just molting.
Yeah, those are his shedded chrysalis. Oh, when he grows a little bit bigger.
And Grinch then carapace. Oh, God.
One thing I don't want to lose track of, what song were the asshole carolers singing when they were chasing the Grinch around?
God, yes, rest ye merry gentlemen, right?
Did that rub anyone else the wrong way that the song they're literally harassing him with was about one of the more actually religious carols you could pick for that scene? They could have easily been harassing him with like Silver Bells or some shit, you know? Any choice of any song that specifically gets big on the other J-Man is a very strange choice in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because even in the original like that entire concept is only brushed up against at the very, very end and only slightly.
Yeah. I just thought it was weird that they included that song at all.
That's what I'm saying. Including any explicit religious song is weird to begin with. But it being the song that they are essentially harassing the Grinch with feels very weird.
It's an ironic choice, but I don't think it works. Yeah.
Maybe they gave Pentatonics the choice. Who am I kidding? Of course they did not. I don't know.
And yeah.
It is a mystery for the ages because it is a very odd choice.
So, hey, I guess let's wrap up our discussion of the Grinch because we're just kind of nitpicking at this point. So I guess final thoughts on the film itself before we get into Crankometer time. How did we feel about this overall?
I liked Kenan Thompson. It's no less offensive than any other dumbass children's movie, you know?
I went into this movie preparing to think that it was bad and disliking it and hating it. I want to say I almost enjoyed it. Okay. I don't know if the 6 months away from this podcast reviewing Christmas movies has affected in my brain in some way, or fatherhood has affected my brain in some way. I didn't hate it. It could have been so, so, so much worse. And I know I shouldn't be giving it credit for that. This is the lowest common denominator of like popular media.
Yeah, but this is some straight design by committee shit, but the committee did a good job this time.
Yeah, it wasn't terrible. Like, I'd be okay if my kid, like, wanted to watch this again. I'd be like, okay, yeah, whatever. I mean, I'd be doing something in the background, but I wouldn't be like, oh, God, this movie again, you know?
Yeah, I get that. For my part, like, this is the third time I've seen this since it came out. The first time I've willingly watched it on my own. And I can say that I generally don't mind it, but I will nitpick it to death because that's who I am and that's what I do. But it's just, there are little things that bother me about the way they, I guess, adapted the story. Like, I still think that they made a mistake sanding off so many of the Grinch's rough edges. Like, it kind of goes back to, like, A Christmas Carol. Like, the whole reason that story works is because Scrooge is a horrible shit, and seeing his redemption is a great thing. When the Grinch is just kind of annoyed at people, it doesn't really work for me.
I getcha.
You know?
I think it's an overcorrection from the 2000 Grinch. Maybe.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Because,
probably.
Like, for example, if your kid said, I want to watch the Jim Carrey Grinch, I think you would call CPS and be like, come take my kid away. I've done a bad thing.
Yes. So, in light of what you just said, I have two questions for you. First question. Let's pretend that we live in a world where Grinch 2000 did not happen, but this movie did.
Okay.
Would you feel the same way about this film if the grievous, horrible abomination that is Grinch 2000 had not occurred? Would we be so forgiving with this movie if this was the first adaptation of the 66 Chuck Jones joint?
That's a good question, because I also remember seeing this studio's version of The Lorax and thinking it was equally just unnecessary and overlong and kind of missing the point. But at least with this one, they generally did it right. It's just certain things don't work for me the way they should. So yeah. I think, yes, you're right. This is an overcorrection from the live action version, but also just taking that story in any direction and fletching it out to 90 minutes at all is probably not the right thing to do.
Well, granted, this is both of these movies, 2000 and 2018, were moves made strictly for money, because how can you improve upon, let's call a spade, perfection? But it's not a perfect special, but it's a damn fine special, the 66 one. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I guess that's as good an opportunity as any to transition into the crankometer. This is our patented X and Y axis where we rate Christmas movies. The X axis is the Christmas quotient, how Christmassy a film is, and the Y axis is the quality quotient, how good we think the film is. So, gentlemen, how Christmassy is The Grinch?
I want to give it a 4.
What would warrant a 5, I guess, is a good question to ask.
Maybe, are you trying to say it should be a 5?
No, I'm just I'm asking, like, where are we going to split our hairs here between 4 and 5 as far as The Grinch
goes? So I want to apply my age-old metric of, would the events of this plot happen if Christmas didn't exist? And I would argue no, because the way that they introduce this whole thing is that The Grinch stocks up on canned goods and food to kind of weather, you know, the Christmas season, because he hates it because he was an orphan. But otherwise, you know, he doesn't mind going. He's still a recluse, but he doesn't mind going down into Whoville for supplies. But this time he has to go around Christmas, and that's what drives him over the edge and steals Christmas.
Okay, yeah.
This whole situation would not happen if Christmas didn't exist. And that is very Christmassy. All of the trappings are very Christmassy. It is a movie about Christmas as a concept. I would say it's either a 4 or a 5. I don't know why. Isn't I think sort of like the we're making this solely to make money. I mean, everything's made to make money, but I don't know. I don't know why it's not a 5, but it's not a 5 for me. It's a 4 for me.
Okay, I'm going to say this. I will agree on a 4. I will say it's not a 5 because of the way they overuse and misuse Christmas songs.
Agreed. That's part of it. That's part and parcel.
Yeah, a lot of it feels like more like, oh, we got to put some Christmas song here, right? Rather than any sort of real acknowledgement of what you're putting and why you're putting it there.
A lot of it feels, I mean, you could say this for most of the movie, but a lot of it feels like checking the boxes rather than done out of some director's like genuine love for the season. You know?
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe the best way I can put it.
Now I will say, gents, if we're agreeing on a 4 here, I will tell you, we also gave Grinch 2000 a 4 on the Christmas scale.
Grinch 2000 is Christmassy in the same way, again, with the plot, the plot rationale, but also the Grinch 2000 is just so friggin' icky, and it just, like, it has this weird greasy pall over it that would reduce it from a 5 to a 4, and in this case, it's just, like, checking the box. It's basically a Minions movie, but somebody created a mod to turn it into a Christmas movie, which is why it's a 4 instead of a 5.
I'll grant you that. That makes perfect sense. So I think we're agreed on a 4. So then let's move over to the Y-axis. How good is The Grinch 2018?
I didn't hate it.
I'll give it a 1.
I'm going to go... Yeah, no,
positive
I'd throw
digits,
out a 2.
Yeah.
I'd throw out a 2. I'd say a 2. It's fine. It's inoffensive. I didn't hate any particular part of it, except for maybe the kid subplot was a little whatever because it's a kid's movie.
Yeah, I can't tell if in right in fleshing this out to an hour and a half, they overwrote it or underwrote the material, but it's whatever they did, they didn't give it enough for me. So I'm going to say it's also a 2 because it's fine. Like, it's perfectly inoffensive, but it just doesn't give me the warm and fuzzies, I guess, you know?
I, again, will reiterate, I went into this preparing to dislike a movie and not having a good time, and that did not happen. So I think with that alone would push it into the positive range, which I think a 2 is fair.
Yeah, I rolled my eyes across the goddamn floor when I saw that minion in the opening, but it surpassed my expectations at that set, which weren't very high, but still.
Okay. That's a good encapsulation. It surpassed my incredibly low expectations. Some of the physical comedy was pretty good. They did a good job.
The animation is very good. Like it's a great movie to just look at.
The design and the animation is very pretty. Set dressing is very pretty. Quality of animation overall is generally good.
Mm-hmm. So there are plenty of good jokes, plenty of, you know, groaners. But on the whole, I think it's a perfectly inoffensive, decent Christmas movie.
I did like all of the Grinch's gadget nonsense. Just gadgets for the sake of gadgets. It was great.
I like the giant springy shoes that he wears. I appreciated those. Oh, boy. So, okay, I think we've landed on a positive 4, positive 2 on our crankometer for 2018's The Grinch.
I would say that's a surprising result. If you had sat me down 3 months ago and told me to rate this movie or what I expected us to rate it, I would have gone lower on both metrics.
Yeah, as many times in our back channel as Brad has said over the last 6 months, we need to tear this Grinch apart. I am pleasantly surprised that we came away from this, you know, kind of sort of not hating it and kind of enjoying it, especially here in May, in the beginning of barbecue season, where Christmas is like an afterthought, especially in 2020, when the world is still being ravaged by God knows what, murder hornets and everything.
Yeah.
It was nice to get back into our regular routine, and I think I appreciated that a little bit.
I think this is a decent movie to do that. The way the final analogy I would say for this movie is like when you find yourself in a situation like you're in a museum or at an office somewhere and they have a cafeteria and it's just like, you know, like a Cisco, everything falls off the Cisco truck kind of cafeteria, and you have to eat there because there's no other options, and you get a sandwich and you sit down. And it's not actually as bad as you thought. It's a halfway decent sandwich. Kind of tastes pretty good. That's what I would say this movie is.
It's a halfway decent sandwich?
It's a halfway decent sandwich at, like, an institutional cafeteria. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like your college cafeteria buffet, and, like, the cookie pie is pretty good, but you don't want to eat the spaghetti.
Yeah. That's what I would say. And the Cisco truck, I feel, is very apt for this extremely mainstream, made-for-everybody movie.
Mm-hmm. Made for moms and dads and little kids.
For those of you outside of the U.S., Cisco is like this giant institutional provider of kitchen supplies and food.
Yeah, he also sang the thong song.
Oh, and with that,
John and I both had the same joke in the chamber, and he pulled the trigger first.
Pachow. We're on social.
Be willing to just interrupt Brad.
We're on social media. You can find us there.
Yeah, we're done with the show. This is over. We're not going to top that. So yeah, if you want to chat with us online about Christmas movies or a Christmas movie you think we should discuss, tweet at us at Christmas Creeps, or you can email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook if you want to go to facebook.com/Christmas Creeps and talk to us on there. And hey, if you're a fan of the show, tell a friend about it, because we're all having a rough time right now. And, you know, it's good to build up the camaraderie around here. So, you know, tell a friend about the show and get them in on the party as well, the Christmas cheer wagon, if you will. But we're on iTunes, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on Stitcher and YouTube and, oh, probably a couple of others. But go like, subscribe, share, do all that fun stuff. And that's going to do it for Christmas Creeps. I can't think of anything else to say. Do we want to call a shot for our next episode, guys?
Do we have any shots to call? Did you buy that thing I linked to you a couple months ago, by the way, Joe?
What was that?
This sounds very ominous.
It was a DVD set of just some absolute garbage. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I remember you sent it to me, but I don't know that I can get it.
You didn't get it at the time? Oh.
No, I know. I didn't Ugh, I didn't order it, but if you send it to me again, I can at least look at it.
All right.
I did want to apologize to anybody that was looking forward to anime. It didn't happen this year. It might just have to be like an odd years only thing.
Yeah, I'm shunning anime this year. This month is anime shun, if you will.
Yeah. Plus, I don't know if Joe has it in him after all of the trials and tribulations of this year to endure the admittedly deeper cuts that I had planned for this year's anime. So,
well, I mean, you know, if you do want to have a shortened anime, we might be able to swing that next time. Who knows?
We'll see what we'll talk about it. We'll do sidebar. We can cut this out.
Skype it to my inbox.
Okay.
Oh boy. So, that's going to do it for Christmas Creeps, folks. So for Christmas Creeps, I am Joseph Wade.
I'm Bradford.
And I'm Johnny Five, the human robot.
Watch out for those murder hornets, everybody.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.